Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, the fantastico Mr. Aaron Zommers. Over on the board, it is Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. Now 6 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock. Welcome back into hour number two.
Hump day.
The big program, along with the Geico Camel on this hump day. Glad to have you along. It is sunny here. A beautiful, crisp fall autumn day here in the state capital. Maybe too much coffee today, Mr. Zommers.
Maybe.
I was up early on Up North News with Kreitlow. I'm very caffeinated today.
I think maybe the caffeine is just increasing your ambition. Maybe you want Madison to be the capital of the nation.
Well, maybe. Maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea, but we are a block off the Capitol Square, high above State Street here, the world headquarters of Civic Media. Coming up this hour, another big hour for you. Coming up after the break at 2:15, Aaron Sereno. He is the Director of Network Operations here at Civic Media. Going to be joining me. We're going to discuss our journeys, but more so his than mine, on this National Coming Out Day. Day set aside to honor all of those in the LGBTQ community who have had their journey, who have decided to make the decision to come out. And we will talk to Aaron about that coming up at 2:15 and also what he does here at Civic Media for us. And then at 2:30, we have Ken Bush on the economic and environmental fortune can be found right here in Wisconsin. By the way, would you spend more for sustainable products? Mr. Zommers, would you?
Yeah. I know. I think sometimes it's not always about spending more, but spending differently. Like, for example, having a water bottle as opposed to buying water bottles.
Right. Could save some money along the way.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
We'll talk to Ken Bush at the bottom of the hour at 2:30 a little bit about that. I found this on scrolling through Instagram yesterday, and apparently this is Mike Lindell now, the MyPillow guy, who is a confidant, a friend of Donald Trump. He's all in on the Trump train, and he is facing multiple lawsuits against MyPillow, also for funneling money illegally through MyPillow for Trump. A bunch of other, he was in court in a deposition, not in court. I mean, not before a judge. This is what happens before you get to a judge, and this attorney has touched off Mike Lindell because he says something like, you know, so like when people call in and, you know, complain about your lumpy pillow. We're going to play you the cut and see what you, this is Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, in depositions in court.
Okay, and I'm not asking about the lumpy pillow calls.
No, they're not lumpy pillows. That's not what they call on, okay? When you say lumpy pillows, now you're an You got that? You're an Mike, is what you are.
Mike,
no,
sorry.
He's an no, he's an ambulance chasing That's what you are. Lumpy pillows, kiss my ass. Put that in your book. No, they answer anything, any problem customer that wants to reach Mike Lindell. Those are the ones. I want to talk to Mike Lindell. I want to talk to Mike Lindell. They send them to here and they go, or they call about, maybe they didn't get their pillow on time because of the FedEx or whatever. Well, we'll cover them even though it could be somebody else's fault. Nobody called because of a lumpy pillow. But good one, though.
You done?
Yeah, I'm done.
What I'm saying,
obviously, you don't have a my pillow, too. You don't, do you?
A lumpy pillow. Wasn't that fantastic?
Nobody calls about a lumpy pillow. But also, just a note, for those of you who aren't aware of the construction of a MyPillow, you have the pillow shell.
Right.
I don't know what you would call it. Pillow sack, some kind of
a
bag.
Pillow sack, sure.
That holds the innards.
The fabric.
And the innards of a MyPillow are chunks of memory foam.
Right.
So they are, by design, lumpy.
It's not, I mean, I don't think it's a great product myself. I've seen them.
They work great for some people.
For some
they're overpriced,
people, and God
but
bless
they
you, sure. But from all the things that could touch off Mike Lindell, of all the charges he's facing, and an attorney refers to, you know, just called about your lumpy pillow, and he took great offense to that.
That tells me that he does indeed get a lot of calls.
He probably, see, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Mike Lindell probably does get a lot of calls about his lumpy pillow. we got to use part of that, you know, every now and again, lumpy pillow. I thought it's one of those things you see on the internet. And I just kept, this is how sad my life is. I was sitting in my truck last night scrolling through this before I left work, and I found it, and I kept replaying it because I just kept laughing every time I replayed it. The lumpy pillow. So I guess we have Mark in the sack calling in. Mark, about a minute left here. We'll give you a chance. Mark, what do you think of the My Pillow guy?
Well, I think if he would have kept his mouth shut during this whole time, his pillow company would not be in trouble. That
right?
We'd all be, you know, thinking it's just cute commercial he's got when all of a sudden he appears in somebody's bathroom medicine chest, and we'd all be laughing about, you know, that commercial and judging his product based on his product rather than him being a out of control jackass, and that. And this is a completely self-inflicted wound.
Right.
I mean, Donald Trump destroys everything that he touches. And apparently if you touch Donald Trump, it destroys you as well.
Including my pillow. Appreciate it, Mark. Mark from the SAC, thanks a lot. We're up against the break. When we come back, we have Aaron Sereno. He is the Director of Network Operations. We'll talk about National Coming Out Day. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever that may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Allbull Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 15 past the hour of 2 o'clock. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. Mr. Zomer's on the board. Joining us this segment is our very own Director of Network Operations here at Civic Media. He is Aaron Carreno here on the show. Well, Aaron, we'll bring you just a little bit on camera here. There you go. Fantastic. Appreciate you coming on, Aaron. You've been with Civic Media for a while, but you have this new title. You're with us a lot more. Tell folks what you do here at Civic Media.
Yeah, so I oversee operations for Civic Media. So it'd be, the liaison between the sales, between programming, between our hosts. Between our, pretty much between everybody. So it's kind of a unique role where I'm able to pivot, move in different directions, and work with our teams and deliver the appropriate information and help build the brands.
In short, he outranks me, so I have to be nice. but you work especially like our music stations across the network. You're working with them, but yeah, you're working with all of us here at Civic Media. Not your first gig in communications or radio and TV. People may have seen you on particularly Fox 20 or Fox 47 here in Madison.
Mm-hmm. Yep, been doing that for about 2 years. I've been in Madison doing radio since 2010 and moved away for a little bit, came back. And now I enjoy a lot more behind the scenes work and the coordination of making this place great and fun and successful. Todd,
do you miss being on the air?
All the time. All the time.
Well, you're welcome here anytime. So, this is fantastic news, Mr. Zomers, because now we can, anytime we have an open space, we just ask Aaron to come in.
I do miss being on the air. You know, I had so much fun being on the air. And in this business, Todd, I mean, you're aware, it can be a little turbulent at times. Yeah. Companies make decisions. Employees shift around. I'm grateful to be able to have gotten out of the business and come back into the business, and I see it in a whole new light. And so I really am happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Doing a great job, and we appreciate your leadership, your guidance here at Civic Media. Today happens to be National Coming Out Day, the first National Coming Out Day organized by Gene O'Leary and Dr. Robert Eichberg with the National Coming Out Day organization. Was observed first on October 11th, 1988, the first anniversary of the National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. So we celebrate it today as National Coming Out Day. Aaron and I have a couple of things in common. One of we happen to be gay. It's one of those things. And so I thought it was good that we kind of talk about, I've talked about my journey a little bit on the air, and I appreciate you being willing to come on and talk about it as well. what does this day mean to you? What does it mean to just pause and reflect on where we are at as people, a part of the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm glad that you brought me on. I really appreciate it. I know it's an important thing to discuss. And, you know, for me, it's about living authentically, having the courage to live authentically. I think that's something that it's not always easy. And I believe everybody's situation is different. So fortunately for me, you know, I'm able to live and do my work and talk about, you know, my personal life where it makes sense with friends and family and coworkers, or sorry, with coworkers. But for me, it's living authentically. And I'm really fortunate to be able to do that.
That's one of the things I love working for Civic Media. I'm a big believer it starts at the top, and Sage Weil, our CEO and owner, certainly encourages everybody to live their authentic selves. There's no fear in this organization. I know that's not the same for everybody who works for other companies out there. You kind of feel like sometimes, well, I can't really be who I am for fear of what people might think. What's been your journey, if you wouldn't mind sharing with people, kind of at what age did you decide to come out? How did it happen?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I mean, it was probably when I was in college, and I just didn't feel like I was in necessarily the safest places when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I'm from a rural community in Sheboygan County. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was more or less finding myself, right? I mean, as I got through college, I was able to meet other people who were like me. That really helped me personally. Mm-hmm. And so coming out was difficult. It was very difficult for my family at first. It took about a year to process, you know, emotions and what my mom thought was going to be my future, what my dad mm-hmm. thought was going to be my future with, you know, maybe grandkids or whatnot. But all of that aside, I mean, as I moved to Madison and as I was able to build my career here and came up professionally, mm-hmm. Been get involved with different organizations, meeting new people, it's just been a very, very freeing experience for me. And it's been so many years where it's just the norm, right? I mean, I don't even think about that part of it anymore. But having the support, having mentors, and having you know, a work environment that also allows us to be who we are is really important to me.
As you and I talked about doing this segment yesterday, I think we came to an agreement on, you know, we happen to be gay. That's a part of who we are. That's not who we are. And I think that once you kind of take it, I mean, it's not like you meet someone and say, hey, are you dating a man or a woman? I mean, you know, if you're heterosexual, it's not like, hey, I'm Todd, I'm sleeping with a chick. You know, it's not like that. And just because someone happens to be gay or someone happens to be trans or whatever their journey is, that's a part of who they are. They're a larger person behind their sexuality.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's a part of who I am. It's an important part of who I am, but it's not how I, you know, it's not how I go about my day. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I'm a brother, the son, I'm a grandson, a colleague to you, Todd. And I agree.
Was there an impetus that said, something happened that made you want to come out?
For me, it was just, I felt like it was, you know, hiding, you know, my feelings. Mm-hmm. I was dating somebody and I wasn't able to bring them around. And that's kind of how that all started. And I just thought to myself, I mean, this is too much work to continue to balance being in the closet while also around my friends, then being out. And so for me, it was time to rip off the Band-Aid and just speak my truth. And and here we are today. And professionally, the same thing. I mean, being in personality radio and top 40 radio for a majority of my career, you know, our listeners are going through all different emotions and they're experiencing different things in their lives. And they would turn to radio to step away from maybe some of the stressors of their work life, especially the music side of it, right? People turn to radio because they want to escape all the stress going on in their world, and it's fun and it's an outlet. And so for me, I thought, well, if I'm talking about my life and talking about things happening in the community or things that I did over the weekend, it's why would I skirt around or lie about certain parts of it, right? Why would I lie about what my partner and I did? For example, we just went to the Mississippi River. We did the Great River Road trip over the weekend. I mean, why would I omit that, you know, from being a radio host?
And you decided to do it very publicly. It was kind of like Ellen-esque. You came out on the air.
Yeah, it was back. It was a while ago. I mean, it was 11 years ago now. Hard to believe it was that long ago. But, you know, it was important to me. It was important for our audience. It was important for our station. Not the station per se, but it was important for me and my work life and my personal life to just to be open and to be honest about it.
I think for people that are listening that might still be in the closet or someone that you know who is in the closet, you and I talked about this as well. Everybody has a different opinion. I'm of the believer that no one should be forced to come out until they're ready. And it's not like people shouldn't be looked down on because they're not ready to come out. But when they do decide they want to come out, they should also be supported.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's maybe not today. Maybe it's tomorrow. Maybe it's in a week, right? I mean, to be supported, to trust somebody, to, you know, your allies, your friends, yeah, today's an important day.
It is. And I remember I didn't come out until I was 38. I mean, talk about coming out, you know, and it was really after the second time I was getting ready to run for a state assembly. And, you know, a mentor of mine, Steve Gunderson, a longtime Republican congressman from Western Wisconsin. And I was thinking about running at the time as a Republican. And I called him up and I said, so when you grow up in a small town like Richland Center of 5,000 people in rural Wisconsin, and you happen to be a Republican and gay, there's not a whole lot of people you could talk to and call. And you pretty much are at the top of the list and the only person on the list. And he was very kind. And he said, well, it's nice to be on somebody's list. And he said, you know, to what you just said, Aaron, he said, you know what? I think you just have to worry about being you. And he said, once you tell the people closest to you who you are, he said, nothing else really matters because you've taken the power away from the people that might hate you or come down on you the wrong way. They don't have power over you anymore because you're living, to your point, authentically. And the first person I came out to was my dad, who was very sweet about the whole thing. And I remember I couldn't get to sleep that night because it was a huge rush of adrenaline for the first time in my life at 38 to be transparent and be who I am with someone who I love. Did you have the same sort of euphoria after you first came out?
Yeah. Really? I mean, I think for me, it was my friends and my peers, my classmates in college, and some of those who I'm still best friends with to this day from growing up. I mean, fortunately for me, it has only made our relationships that much better. But I remember when my parents didn't take the news well. I remember I drove down to Racine to talk with my grandmother, who was a very she's kind of an open book, right?
Sure.
And I shared my coming out with my parents, and I shared it with her, and she just kind of put her hand on my shoulder and she said, "Oh, honey, I knew for a while." I was like, "How did you know that? Come on, Grandma, this is supposed to be a moment for me." You know, and then the waterworks started flowing. Right, I started crying. But
yeah, I mean, probably the first people, actually before 38, I never really technically came out. But one of my dear friends from high school, Carrie Anderson, we were having lunch one day. This is in my 20s. And she said, "Todd, you're a great guy. The problem is you're shopping in the wrong aisle." I thought that was a great line. And then one of the last people I came out to was my maternal grandmother, who lived to 96. It was about 6 years before she passed. She was the first dean of a university in Wisconsin, an educated woman. And there was nothing but curiosity and love and compassion. I realized that I was fortunate. I didn't lose anybody in my family or my friend circle because of coming out. I realize, Aaron, there are people in our community who are not so lucky, and I think it's good to remember them as well.
Correct. I echo that.
And so if you know someone that is struggling, if you have someone that wants to talk, you can certainly reach out. There's now, thanks to Tammy Baldwin, a fellow person in the LGBTQ community, she set up the National Mental Health Hotline. You can simply dial 988-988 on your cell phone and to talk to someone. Certainly reach out to someone in your community. I mean, hey, Aaron and I are here at Civic Media. We're always happy to talk to people as well. That'd be encouraging.
Yeah, and it's interesting enough that yesterday was World Mental Health Day and today National Coming Out Day. I mean, I've had battles with mental health just in general, anxiety, the pressures of the day-to-day, right? And then you add on when you're coming out, there's that whole other element. So it just sometimes it's just good to take a deep breath and know that you've got support. You just got to find the right people. And especially on a day like today, if today's not a day to, you know, feel like you want to come out, or that's okay too, right?
I mean, absolutely.
There's a lot of support, as you mentioned, you know, just before
yeah.
the 988 number.
can do that. And I will tell you, Aaron, you can speak for yourself. I'm happier. I'm happier being my authentic self with the people that I love. And life is better. You know, it's the old Trevor Project line. You know, it gets better. And it's not always easy at the beginning. But for me, it has definitely gotten better. I'm a happier and healthier person for living my authentic self.
That explains that glow you got going on right now here in the studio. Or is it just that hot
that's
in here?
That's just the sauna in here, the sweat.
So warm.
That's what it is. Aaron Carreno, thank you so very much. Appreciate you, my friend. Great job.
Todd, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Stay tuned next. We have Ken Bush talking about economy and environment. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Lovell Show. And this, on National Coming Out Day, is the Civic Media Ready Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Lovell Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, 233 now across the state of Wisconsin. Glad to have you along. Happy to have our next guest here as well. He did not say he would not come back. He has agreed to come back, Mr. Zommers, so I guess that's okay. He has, by the way, the number one background of any guest we've had on our live stream. So whether you're watching on YouTube or Facebook or Twitter, wherever, Ken Bush has an outstanding background with all his musical instruments. More importantly, he is also part of Climate Positive Now and materialintelligence.com. He is an author, a presenter, and a great guest as well. Ken, thank you so much for being here.
Wow, thanks again, Todd. I really appreciate it. I had so much fun last time. I never left. I've been in this waiting room for the last 7 weeks.
and working the whole time. It looked fantastic.
Multitasking, yeah. Whole new meaning.
Well, for those that might not have missed or caught you on the first time you're here, remind folks, if you would please, a little bit about your work with Climate Positive Now and kind of how you came to this be this really renowned speaker on environmental issues and sustainability.
So I'm a journalist, right? I'm not a scientist, so please nobody ask me a hard science question. But I just got fascinated. I've been in the furniture industry since the early 90s as a journalist, covering the North American industry, the European industry, and participating in trade shows and conferences all around the world, South America, Asia, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And really falling in love with how global this industry is, right?
Sure.
And I'm not a woodworker, as I tell people during my presentations. My last woodworking project was a pile of sawdust next to a puddle of blood.
Do you still all your digits?
I do.
All right, fantastic.
And I got a C in shop, so at least I didn't have to retake that class. But I had just so much respect for people who know what they're doing when they're building furniture, designing furniture, just simply working with wood, staining wood, and working with interior design, right? Since we talked last, I've had a lot of conversations with a company that does, an architectural millwork firm that does like the Wynn Hotel, right?
Wow.
They did Google's headquarters. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say that. Facebook's headquarters, right? Super high-end interiors. And, you know, what I'm learning from companies like that is that, you know, they do all this great high-end work because they are specialists. They really, really know what they're doing with those materials.
Mm-hmm.
What their challenge is that the design firms that specify the, you know, the look and the materials and whatnot for these big projects are specifying things that, for instance, wood can't do.
Right.
Just not possible. So what we're kind of isolating here is a real communication breakdown between the people who have expertise in the materials, in this case, you know, beautiful hardwoods, and the people who are working with the big high dollar clients, you know, and they're dreaming up things that just can't be done. And as it was expressed to me, this ends up being, you know, 3 days before a building opens, people on the floor screaming at each other and threatening lawsuits because it just isn't turning out. So my whole gig now is, you know, because I've had so much background in materials and I've worked a lot with the interior design and the furniture design markets, is opening these channels of communication. I'm not going to mention the school, but there is a very, you know, well-regarded technical school in our neighborhood here, Madison. I presented to their cabinet working shop, cabinet working class a few years ago, and I know they've got a great interior design program too, right?
Sure.
So I thought, well, let's get the interior designers in here because I'm going to be talking about the basic materials and sustainability that you all are dealing with. And they didn't say this outright, but I've heard this from other educators, but those two departments are just not talking to each other.
Really?
That's interesting. This is weird silos where everybody's, I don't know if it's territoriality or just never occurred to us. You know, right. We're woodworkers and they're interior designers. And you know, one thing I've had to correct my industry on this too, when you hear the term interior designer, people think interior decorator.
Right, right.
You know, the people who pick out the pillows and the drapes. Right. Right. If you ever say something like that to a professional interior designer, people who have to know codes and materials and, you know, all of these very, these technical aspects to building out an interior, if you ever say that to one of those guys, you're going to get punched in the throat.
Right. Because there's so much more than that. Yeah.
It's so much more, right? And when you're talking, and they're actually, you know, they're transitioning to this term interior architects, which I kind of like.
Yeah, I like that too.
Because they really are dealing with structural issues within the building envelope, right? Mm-hmm. Generally, the architect kind of designs the theme, designs the building envelope, the exterior, et cetera, and then they turn it over to their interior design team to build out the interior. And as I think we talked about last time, buildings in the construction industry are 39% of all global CO2 emissions every year.
It's incredible. Right?
That's just amazing. It blew my mind. It's about the same as the US and China as countries.
Wow.
The emissions, right? So that's a big, big footprint, as we like to say, carbon footprint.
And the thing that I learned last time from you is that wood, using wood, has some of the lowest CO2 emissions, and it's the glass and things like that. You see all these glass buildings now. That's what's increasing it the most. Am I right?
Exactly. I'm going to go negative here on you, Todd. Wood actually has a negative carbon footprint. And this is where the terminology gets so screwy, right?
Yeah.
Wood absorbs carbon. Trees absorb carbon as they grow. Through photosynthesis, we're supposed to learn that in eighth grade earth science or whatever. But very few people know that carbon then is captured, right? Captured and stored in the wood. And the process of photosynthesis is basically CO2 from the atmosphere is inhaled by the tree. The tree splits off the oxygen, releases that, so we all got something to breathe, and then turns that carbon into the glucose and the sugars that it uses to build its own woody mass.
Wow.
Right? And what a tree cannot use, that carbon gets driven into the soil through the root system. And so, you know, we could get really big picture, but they call it the carbon cycle. Every living thing uses carbon in some way. You are 18% carbon just standing there. So am I. Wood is 50% carbon by dry weight, right? Mm-hmm. So half of the chemical makeup of wood is naturally captured carbon, right?
Yeah.
And the magical thing about trees is they run on, you know, water and sunlight. You know, there's not a whole lot of inputs.
One of my friends that is much smarter than travels a lot more than I do has been to Europe several times and knows people there in Europe. And to your point, they're building these big, basically skyscrapers now out of wood, which, you know, to a goofball like me, I think, holy cow, this is a fire trap. But he was explaining to me, and maybe you could expand on this, that if you do it the correct way with modern technology, wood can be actually more fire retardant than, I guess, metal in some cases, and safer and more durable, and you're helping the environment. Is that true?
Exactly, right. Yeah. That wood, I'm going to confess, I'm just learning about the structural timber, the laminated veneer, lumber, and there's like other alphabet soup acronyms for all of that. Sure. But basically, you know, the way they treat it in some way, the adhesives that they use, every step that you add to, you know, to create a value-added product like a structural, you know, wood, something you could use for framing a building and not just to build like a skyscraper, adds to the performance, the insect resistance, the water resistance, the fire resistance. But, I mean, even before we had all these crazy additives, there are buildings that were built in the year 600 out of wood, 3-4 stories high, that are not just still standing, they're still in daily use.
Wow.
We're talking about like these temples in Japan,
that's
right?
That's crazy.
And it's all because it's just wood on wood construction. It's it's you know, mortise and tenon, it's dovetails, it's dowels. And wood, you know, even though you've cut it down, it's still alive. It responds to heat and temperature. It moves, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I had a really, an old woodworker explain to me once, you know, anytime you try and fasten wood together using metal, whether it's screws or nails or whatever, that wood is going to get right to work pushing that metal out, just like our skin would push out a sliver,
sure,
right? Because it just doesn't work and play well with the organic right. sort of, you know, the way wood is still an organic material, you know, until it's just completely gone.
It's fascinating.
But the fact that, and somebody did a calculation in one of these old buildings, right? They're like, the trees we used to build that building have grown over, over and over 3 dozen times since that building was built. And that forest is still healthy.
I'm a big believer that the generation that comes after mine will make the world a better place. And I look at, I mean, our producer engineer, Mr. Zommers, is a Gen Zer. And we have other younger people involved here in our company. But a recent study, and we're talking with Ken Bush, by the way, and of Climate Positive Now and materialintelligence.com. A majority on this poll, 75% of Gen Z shoppers are willing to spend 10% more for sustainable products. What do you make of this, Ken?
And that number keeps increasing, right? When I first became aware of that kind of research, I was preparing some educational content. A big part of what I do is certified educational content about mm-hmm. materials for architects and designers, because they all need so many credits of continuing education every year.
Sure.
And I first found this research and I put it into one of these articles, and it, literally 2 weeks ago I was delivering one of these things to about 377 interior designers, a webinar format. Mm-hmm. And I was reviewing some of my slides about the consumer research, and it was 2 years old and it was way outdated. These numbers keep climbing.
Wow.
I started working with design teachers, right? Design programs at universities about 7 or 8 years ago now. And the advice I got that really, really helped me was from a professor who said, you know, okay, and this is before I knew who the Simon Sinek guy was, right?
Right.
The Finding Your Why or whatever it was. He goes, you know, I understand what your industry does, you know, what they do. He said, but, you know, what is this wood products industry? Why do mm-hmm. they do it? And I was a bit confused. And so he rephrased it. He said, if you don't start the conversation with my students about how you are saving the world with your product, your mm-hmm. company, your industry, it's going to be a very, very short conversation.
Wow.
So none of that stuff really surprises me anymore. I'm surprised that anybody's ever surprised by it. If you know any Zers or millennials, it's really the first thing they think about. And this is what I'm trying to train. You know, if you sell kitchen cabinets, if you make mm-hmm. kitchen cabinets, mm-hmm. if you install closet systems, if you do anything with wood, start the conversation with the sustainability story, which is basically wood stores more carbon than is released in converting it into something that you use as a product. So even after harvesting it, turning it into a panel, turning that panel into a cabinet, installing that panel in a house or that cabinet in a house, even after all those steps, that wood is still storing more carbon than was spent, right? Mm-hmm. Was released in all of those processes. That's what makes it carbon negative. When I said earlier, I'm going to go negative on you, carbon negative.
I appreciate the pointing this out, because I think there's just this misnomer and however the spin or whatever that, you know, oh, geez, if you're environmentally friendly, you know, it's not good for business somehow. And you just pointed out that you can actually gain consumers and you can do better for your business by being sustainable.
Well, and the stuff we're already using, it's not like we have to re-engineer these different wood materials, whether it's mm-hmm. solid wood or structural laminated veneer lumber or particle board and MDF even, right?
All of these materials,
because they're based on wood fiber, are already the most sustainable building materials we have just sitting there, right?
Right.
But there is this assumption, you're absolutely right. People will be like, okay, well, we would want to do a green project, but we're not going to pay the extra, whatever, 10% something, right? Well, the joke's on them. This is still, in the case of, you know, some of these composite wood materials, they are the most, let's say, budget-friendly products out there. We don't say cheap anymore. We say budget-friendly.
I like
and
that.
And they are also
He's
by far...
He's a marketer too, folks.
I've been kicked in the shin so many times, you know, saying the wrong thing. I've learned eventually. But it doesn't have to be more expensive to be the most sustainable. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of times what you're paying for when you are paying extra for a green product is the marketing budget for the greenwashing campaign.
Less than a minute left here. We're talking with Ken Bush from I'm going to call you, I could call you like a forestry or a sustainability expert. That's fair, isn't it?
I'm a wood products fanboy.
Right. We're going to come back and talk about something very close to Wisconsin here. And it all comes back to, you know, we're not necessarily reinventing the wheel. Our native tribes have been doing this for a long time, talking about a sustainable forest here in Wisconsin. All that and more. Don't go anywhere. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 10 minutes before the hour of 3 o'clock. That's 10 minutes away from Matt Flynn Direct. Immediately after the national news, weather update, Matt Flynn is in. He'll have the latest of history in the making. An attorney, also a former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Always a great show. Matt Flynn Direct coming up after the top of the news. Right now, our guest this segment, we appreciate him being here for the second time, is Ken Bush. He is an author, he's a journalist, and a sustainability expert. Ken, before the break there, I kind of mentioned and teased that, you know, one of our colleagues here at Civic Media, his name is Robert Pilot, and he hosts a great program called Native Roots Radio. People can hear it after 10 o'clock every weeknight. And one of the reasons I love listening to Native Roots Radio and Robert Pilot as a Native American, he educates in a very gentle way, not judgmental, but informs people of the history of Native Americans, especially in Wisconsin and Minnesota. And if you look at what the tribes of Wisconsin have been doing of sustainability and forests, it leads you, of all places, from Yale education to the Menominee tribe here in Wisconsin. You've taken that journey, but as you said during the break, you came at it from your words, not mine, the dark side.
Well, I'm going to have clients now that are going to be sending you hate mail because of that. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah, my background, the magazines I've worked for over the years have been very focused on European-style furniture production, which is composite wood panels, you know, very advanced decorative surfaces, et cetera, et cetera. Great, amazing stuff, right? There's not enough hardwood capacity or manufacturing talent out there to fulfill everybody's needs if we all wanted solid wood furniture. So in my world, everything has its place, right? But I have been learning more and more about the forestry angle of this, right? My sustainability story started with carbon capture and storage, and I'm reverse engineering it into how we handle our forests. And it just so happens what is considered the continent's best managed forest without any peers is the Menominee Forest.
Wow.
It blows my mind. I was,
right
Yale
here in Wisconsin,
right? And I was just talking to some representatives because I'm going to get up there before the leaves are all gone and kind of experience this myself. But that forest, the prescription for how to manage that forest was written down in 1854.
Wow.
They're using the same, and it was written down by Chief Oshkosh.
Who, really,
ironically, is today getting some sort of National Forestry Recognition Award posthumously. Right?
Like today? Really? Wow.
Literally today, there's some ceremony in the Wisconsin Dells where he is, you know, being given a, I guess you can't call it a lifetime achievement award, right? But, you know.
A recognition,
So we have the best example of how to manage a forest. They've got more trees now than they did in 1854. Right, their problem is finding enough people to come and help them harvest it. And I didn't know this until hanging out with the hardwood lumber guys last week. But we also have a problem. Paper mills are shutting down. Too much of our pulp and paper is being delivered from overseas. People are buying less hardwood flooring, furniture, millwork, etc., than they used to. And you know, that's a challenge for these managed forests because they need to do something with this wood. If these forests get overgrown, it becomes very unhealthy.
Right.
Right.
But there again, I mean, not to interrupt again, but I mean, explain to us, explain to me, I guess. Again, it's this narrative out there. Who's creating this narrative in the business or capitalist or wherever political society that's saying, oh, don't buy wood because you're deforestation, you're going to ruin the trees. But when you look at, you know, our Native American brothers and sisters, the Menominee tribe, who've been doing it long since before we got here, they're doing it the right way, and it's actually good for the environment, right?
What Chief Oshkosh wrote down in 1854 was the result of untold generations of knowledge, right? Prescribed burns, knowing which species to take out, knowing at what age to take out these trees to keep the regeneration, right? We can't just hug trees. We have to hug the entire forest, right?
Well said.
It's an ecosystem. It's a biome. It is an organism. It's not just a bunch of trees there. It is one living entity. Mm-hmm. And it's, I guess it's not rocket surgery. We didn't have, certified foresters. We didn't have, guys, walking around with hydrometers and taking core samples, 150, 300 years ago. It was just observing how their environment thrived.
Right.
I had there's a great essay I wrote, and I use it in some of my presentations. There's a woman named Claire Fang. She's an environmentalist. She's a Yale educated environmental engineer. She wrote an essay called Why I Hate the Word Sustainability.
Wow.
I know, right? Yeah, so I'm like, yeah. Wow, that's she also get my attention. Yeah. So she said, basically in nature, sustaining is just barely surviving. A healthy ecosystem thrives. If you are just aiming to sustain, you're really on just a slow decline. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out how to make not just the forests, but our society. We have to be striving toward thriving rather than just barely keeping up.
Ken, a quick caller on the line. Carolyn from, I believe, Middleton. I'll give you about 20 seconds here. Do you have a question or a comment about the Menominee Forest? Go ahead.
Yeah, the Menominee Forest, when they first put up satellites, remember Mother Jones magazine had an article about what they were seeing on the planet, and the chunk of Menominee Forest was so brilliant with a healthy landscape, I think it was, mm-hmm. That they centered theirs. Oh, I don't know. I'll think of the rest of it.
Sure, that's fine. Well, anyway, appreciate your call. Thanks so much for pointing that out. Yeah, absolutely. Carolyn from Middleton. It's literally a treasure we can see from space, Ken.
Yeah, like a jewel, right? You know, I don't want to say it's managed, but it's not manipulated, right? It's not, they have not been driving, more profitable species into that biome. They are leaving it as it was, the natural biodiversity.
About a minute or so left in the last minute here. What can we as consumers, what can we do as citizens to help support the environment and support, I won't say sustainability, maybe thrivability?
Thrivability. We got to workshop that one a little bit, Todd.
All right, sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I'm with you there.
I'm a talker, not a writer.
Basically, try and make informed choices and be very, very suspicious of greenwashing. Wood is good. The only way we can measure and compare the environmental impacts of materials and products is through their carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. And anytime the conversation is carbon, wood is going to win. It is the only material that is climate positive, which is the same thing as carbon negative, but it's not. It's a lot less confusing to say. So go to climatepositivenow.org and sign up, and we will keep you abreast of how to buy the right furniture.
Ken Bush of climatepositivenow.org. That's climatepositivenow.org. Thank you so much. A wonderful guest as always. Please come back soon.
I appreciate it, Todd. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Also, thank you to Pat Kreitlow, Trigby Olson, and Aaron Carreno. All fantastic guests today. And, of course, you for listening. Stay tuned now as our friend Matt Flynn is next on Across the Civic Media Radio Network. Do not touch that dial. For Aaron Zomers, I'm Todd Allball. Remember, whatever you believe in, keep banging your drum.